Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
It's embarrassing and uncomfortable to have to ask permission from the nurse to use the bathroom every time.
Community members fundraise for an all-gender restroom at a Palmer High School. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 12th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, cleanup efforts and a state investigation into a fuel spill in Bethel.
Will they ever recover the full 2,000 gallons? That's all debatable.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are a hunter, birder, or outdoor enthusiast, the U.S. Geological Survey is asking for help tracking the bird populations in Alaska. The USGS manages a nationwide bird banding program, and every year, thousands of birds are marked with small, numbered leg bands. If you see, find, or harvest a banded bird, please report the band number online at reportband.gov. The information provided will help inform how bird populations may be changing. This message sponsored by the USGS Alaska Science Center.
Governor Mike Dunleavy has indicated that he will vote in favor of a constitutional convention. At an Alaska Resource Development Council forum yesterday, candidates for governor were asked during a lightning round if they would be voting for a constitutional convention. Candidates responded by raising yes or no signs. The Anchorage Daily News reports that Dunleavy and Republican Charlie Pierce raised yes signs. Former Governor Bill Walker, an independent, and Les Guerra, a Democrat, raised no signs. Alaska voters are asked every 10 years if there should be a convention to consider amending the state's constitution. While the question has been soundly defeated in the past, both sides of the debate have been preparing for a fight this year. The question will be on the November 8th ballot. The Alaska Public Offices Commission will hear a campaign finance complaint against Governor Dunleavy on Friday. It alleges Dunleavy's campaign illegally coordinated with a third-party group called A Stronger Alaska by having Brett Huber simultaneously serve in both Dunleavy's campaign and A Stronger Alaska. A Stronger Alaska is funded by the National Republican Governors Association, which has already allocated at least $3 million to support Dunleavy's reelection. State law prohibits third-party groups from coordinating with campaigns. A ruling in favor of the RGA and Dunleavy's campaign would clear the way for A Stronger Alaska to spend its money before the election. A ruling against the groups could force A Stronger Alaska to pause its spending until it takes additional action, such as disbanding the group, refunding contributions, and then reforming the group. That process could be done quickly enough to allow spending before the election, but it would require the Republican Governors Association to disclose the donors behind the $3 million it gave to A Stronger Alaska. Dunleavy also leads his challengers in fundraising for the latest reporting period. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation is investigating a large fuel spill at the new Vitus terminal in Bethel. KYUK's Emily Schwing reports.
Last Saturday, Bernie Nowicki says DEC received a call. 200 gallons of gasoline had spilled at the Vitus fuel terminal in Bethel.
Follow-on conversation led to believe that the spill was approximately 2,000 gallons.
Nowicki, DEC's Western Region on-scene coordinator, says a preliminary investigation pinpoints the source of the leak to some loose flange bolts on one of the tanks.
Well, the good thing is it's remained in containment. The responsible party, Vitus Energy, they was taking appropriate action to recover as much of the free product as possible in a containment. With the gasoline, it's a lot of quick evaporation. Will they ever recover the full 2,000 gallons? That's all debatable.
The Vitus fuel terminal was built last year. The brand new facility is designed to contain spills, and Nowicki says environmental damage will likely be minimal.
When they laid the ground out, they built it up, they put a rubberized liner down throughout the whole containment area, and it goes up over top of the dike berm sidewalls as well. And that liner is sealed, and there's quality control checks as they're going through that process to ensure that this thing is will not leak.
In an email, a spokesperson for Vitus Energy said there were no injuries. The company doesn't believe any wildlife was impacted, and they have no reason to believe anyone forced their way into the facility. In Bethel, I'm Emily Schwing.
Community members in the Matanuska Susitna Borough are fundraising for an all-gender restroom at Colony High School in Palmer. That's after the school board voted last month to ban transgender students from using bathrooms that match their gender identity. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports.
Under the school district's current policy, transgender students have two bathroom options. One is the bathroom that matches their gender assigned at birth. The other is a single stall restroom, which in most schools is in the nurse's office.
But that's problematic because there's only one of those, and there are a number of kids that may want to use it. And also it's meant for kids visiting the nurse who are sick.
That's Teresa Klemmer. Her teen, Morgan, is a junior in the district and identifies as non-binary.
Morgan has reported that it's embarrassing and uncomfortable to have to ask permission from the nurse to use the bathroom every time and, you know, to announce their presence there.
To protect trans students from having to out themselves at the nurse's office, Morgan came up with an idea. Turn one of the school's boys' or girls' restrooms into an all-gender restroom. Klemmer started a GoFundMe page to help cover construction costs associated with privacy improvements, like making all stalls floor-to-ceiling. So far, 19 donors have given more than $1,700. Klemmer estimates that the project would cost up to $5,000. Even if they reach that goal, the school board would have to approve the donation and the project. Klemmer thinks it's consistent with the board's intent.
It's creating bathrooms for kids who would feel comfortable sharing bathrooms with kids of different gender backgrounds to share bathrooms with each other, perhaps with some privacy enhancements to, you know, make it even more private.
When the school board voted last month to temporarily suspend its previous policy, discomfort and concern for girls' safety were cited as main reasons. Here's parent Nicole Smith speaking at the September 7th meeting.
This is not an issue of transphobia. This is not an issue of name-calling, fear, or lack of sympathy for those who are uncomfortable in their own skin. This is about telling girls and women that they have the power and right to stand up for themselves, their boundaries, and their bodies.
Next week, the board will decide whether to make that change more permanent by adopting a new bathroom use policy based exclusively on gender assigned at birth. School Board President Ryan Ponder, who helped create the new policy, did not respond to an interview request for this story. Vincent Foyer is a parent in Wasilla, and he's transgender. He says the concern about cisgender girls' safety overlooks the risk of sexual violence transgender kids also face.
Why can't both be important? We all recognize that cisgender women are at risk for sexual assault. The statistics on it are there. You can't argue with that. But the statistics are just as bad and worse when we're looking at trans youth and the transgender community in general.
Transgender youth are more likely to experience sexual violence than their cisgender peers, according to a 2017 study by the CDC. That risk goes up when trans students have to use the bathroom that matches their gender assigned at birth, according to a 2019 study. Foyer says safety concerns for trans kids aren't getting talked about at school board meetings.
Every time someone says we have to protect the girls, you're saying you don't recognize a trans girl as a girl. By protecting trans youth, we are protecting girls because trans girls are girls. Trans boys are boys.
Foyer says an all-gender restroom could be a temporary solution at Colony High School, but it's not ideal. He'd like the district to reinstate its original policy.
In the policy itself, it is actually stating this isn't someone who just shows up today and says, oh, hey, I want to be a girl, and then automatically just gets access to girls' spaces.
The policy also outlined a series of meetings with school administrators, guidance counselors, school nurses, and others to develop a plan for that student's needs. The Federal Department of Education has proposed changes to Title IX to strengthen protections against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. If those changes get finalized, the district may have to allow trans students to use bathrooms that match their identity or risk losing federal funds. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, those fat bears' diet might be more diverse than you thought.
What we saw was that after they filled up on salmon, they would go off into the surrounding, usually uplands, and eat berries.
Salmon, berries, bears. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
The commercial space industry could become a $1 trillion industry by 2040, according to some analysts. And companies that build rockets are looking for a place to launch. Some say that means the opportunity for Kodiak's Pacific Spaceport Complex could reach new heights. But if the industry is going to grow in Kodiak, it has to overcome some local opposition first. KMXT's Kirsten Dobrath reports.
Back in March, California-based aerospace company Astra successfully sent a rocket into space from Kodiak's Pacific Spaceport Complex.
5, 4, 3.
First motion. First. Vehicle has cleared the tower.
Its payload included a few smaller satellites developed by tech companies for things like weather observation or providing GPS data. Milton Keeter is the chief executive officer of Alaska Aerospace, which operates the Pacific Spaceport Complex on Kodiak's Narrow Cape. He says it used to take a year or more for those satellites to get up into space.
So the new rocket industry has decided to say, hey, well, how about if I make a smaller rocket that I can actually launch more often, and then I can get these smaller payloads up very quickly.
That's what makes Kodiak's spaceport complex on Narrow Cape unique. It's one of only four facilities in the U.S. that can launch those types of rockets into orbit. Alaska Aerospace makes its money from contracts with the federal government and private companies. The company is state-owned but hasn't received state funding since 2015. But shooting things off into space doesn't come without controversy. Kodiak Spaceport is at the end of the island's road system near several popular beaches and within a few miles of some homes. Launch windows shut down the one road that provides access to nearby recreation areas and impose water and air closures, too. Dan Rohr is a local businessman and the former borough mayor. He helped develop a master plan that guides the facility's use and impact to the public.
It was a way for the community to talk about future development at the spaceport, to work together with Alaska Aerospace to come up with something that had the least negative impact on the community while at the same time still creating a viable spaceport.
But this summer, the Kodiak Island Borough fielded complaints over frequent road closures. People said the closures were happening outside launch windows with little or no notification. And beachgoers weren't the only ones who were angry. Several members of the public addressed borough assembly members at a contentious work session in early September, including Patty O'Donnell, the board president of the Alaska Whitefish Trawlers Association. He said an upcoming launch would have temporarily closed an area where dozens of boats were fishing for pollock.
I think the breakdown in communication is the key issue here, and that they should have organized this launch around a time frame when it wasn't impact in such an important economic driver for Kodiak.
Everyone knows how much money is lost when a tender can't get to a cannery because of a water closure. But the financial impacts of a rocket launch, that's less clear. Rohr says finding a balance between existing industries and emerging ones is an economic sweet spot.
My argument's always been we absolutely should diversify into other things, but we need to be careful that as we diversify into those other things, that we don't hurt a guaranteed economic resource.
Keeter, the CEO, says he's to blame for this summer's public backlash.
I think that I personally did not do a very good job of communicating with the community on our path forward.
People from Kodiak are a key part of that path, according to Keeter. The Kodiak facility employs about 40 full and part-time staff, plus contractors. Keeter says that number swells around a launch window. He says the complex also fills contracting jobs with Kodiak workers and businesses. Rohr says if the company continues to hold up its part of the master plan, that's an exciting prospect.
That's where a lot of true economic development comes from, is by having additional people live here, enroll their kids in our schools, be involved in our, you know, in our community.
Alaska Aerospace is in talks with other companies about launching from the island, but Keeter says there's a limit to how many and how frequently launches can happen from Kodiak. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Cancer is not a simple disease, and when people in remote Southeast Alaska get cancer, things can be even more complicated. They might have to travel to specialized care, and that can be expensive and adds additional stress. But an organization in Petersburg is trying to make a tough situation a little easier. KFSK's Rachel Cassandra reports.
Marlene Cushing is a retired public health nurse who has seen many cancer patients.
There's many different kinds of therapy. Some people need surgery, some people get chemotherapy, some people get radiation, some get combinations of everything.
Cushing says that some people just get palliative care.
That means care to reduce their symptoms and support them in making the most out of the time that they have left.
Cushing works with Beat the Odds. It's a nonprofit group under the tax umbrella of the local hospital. They support people with cancer in many ways. Some people get travel vouchers or access to an apartment in Seattle. Others get help with chores. That's a service Pia Riley sees as crucial.
It was very helpful when you can't go to the grocery store yourself and you don't have anybody else around, you know.
Riley volunteers with Beat the Odds. She has lived in Petersburg for decades, but is originally from Sweden, and she has survived cancer 3 times. Beat the Odds runs a cancer support group in town. It's been many years since Riley had cancer, but she still goes to support others.
I think people need to have the hope that even if it's looking, you know, not so good, then there's still hope. It didn't look good for me either, but I'm here after that many years.
Counselor Leah Stanton-Greger facilitates the support group. She tells me that a new diagnosis can be really overwhelming.
Often people will look to others, maybe, you know, in the group in particular, to say, now what? You know, what do I do? Or here's what my experience is, and does this seem right? You know, that this is what my doctors are recommending, because there's just so much kind of information coming at them quickly.
Beat the Odds also buys supplies for the hospital. They've purchased comfortable chairs for chemotherapy and special IV pumps and blankets. Riley says these details are important.
You know, the hours you're spending up there getting your chemo and those warm blankets really helps.
Cushing tells me Beat the Odds pays for cancer treatment training in Petersburg.
We've paid for training for the local nursing staff so that people don't have to travel away from town to get that kind of treatment, which is really, really important.
Riley was one of those first people to get chemotherapy in Petersburg.
I assumed that I was going to have to go back and forth, you know, to Seattle. So it was a big surprise, and it really helped me to be able to be home, because when you're in your own home, you so much easier to heal, right? So being by the water and watch the whales and being in the woods and stuff like that helps.
This year, Beat the Odds budgeted over $33,000 for cancer support. The largest amounts will go to travel expenses and medical center training and supplies. Reporting for KFSK in Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank, Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands.
Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
For the second time in 2 years, the jumbo jet-sized bear 747 has been crowned champion of Fat Bear Week. Weighing in at nearly 1 ton, the voracious and voluptuous brown bear toppled his competition Tuesday during the finals for this year's tournament, which pits the brown bears of Katmai National Park against each other in a voter-decided March Madness-style bracket as they bulk up for winter. But voters don't rely on size alone when casting their ballots. This year, they went with the chunkiest choice. Still, Leanne Law with Katmai National Park says 747 is the largest bear at Brooks Falls and maybe one of the largest in the world.
His dominance combined with his fishing skills, that really allows him to build up substantial fat reserves for the winter. And even in early summer, when I first see this bear, you know, he is large and he still carries the weight of his previous successes.
That weight tipped the scales in his favor to beat feisty finalist 901 with just over 54% of the votes. And that wasn't the only drama for this year's competition. On Sunday, the park announced someone had spammed that night's face-off with fraudulent votes. Mike Fitz is a former ranger at Katmai and the resident naturalist at explore.org, where bear lovers can watch the bears at Brooks Falls on a webcam. Fitz oversees the competition and says several thousand fraudulent votes were cast during the matchup between 747 and 2019's champion, Holly.
Throughout the day, 747 had been leading by a fairly sizable margin. And then Holly quickly caught up and surpassed him in votes. Once the suspicious votes were filtered out, then 747 was the clear winner.
Fitz says the competition should really be about the stories behind the bears and the ecosystems that support them, not just who wins. This year, those stories are reaching more people than ever. Fitz says he's been interviewed by reporters as far away as France and Australia.
It's an event that spans international boundaries, and the more people that are aware of Katmai and the Bristol Bay region and in Alaska and to wild landscapes in general, I think the better.
It may not be just about who wins, but fans of 747 can hibernate soundly tonight knowing that their pick is certifiably and undeniably the fattest of the fat bears. So bears like those heavyweight contenders in the Fat Bear Week competition are clearly eating plenty of salmon. But bears in general are likely eating more berries than you would think. That's according to research published in the journal Scientific Reports last month that says bears of all kinds need a more mixed diet. The study is the work of biologist Charles Robbins, a bear nutrition expert at Washington State University's Bear Center, which is the only research institution in the U.S. with a captive brown bear population. It was an observation in the wilds of Alaska, though, that got Robbins thinking maybe bears aren't as carnivorous as we thought.
We know that salmon are just a wonderful resource, and so we were watching streams that were a kilometer long and just pool after pool after pool of salmon in just maybe 6-7 inches of water, so easily catchable. And what we saw were bears that would certainly they would come in and eat salmon, but we just hypothesized that they would eat salmon, go to shore, sleep it off, come in, eat more salmon, and just do 24 hours of that. But what we saw was that after they filled up on salmon, they would go off into the surrounding, usually uplands, and eat berries. They'd spend 6 to 10 hours a day eating berries and being in those berry fields. And it just didn't make any sense for us. So at that stage, we came back to WSU where we could work with our captive bears.
And that's right. You have a population of captive grizzly bears there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, we started a captive grizzly bear research program 36 years ago now, and it's the interplay between both captive and wild studies that have yielded so many interesting results and studies. There are only about 4 blocks from my office. We have 11 bears, so we know them as individuals. They have big personalities. They go by names like Luna and John and Frank, and so it's easy for us to latch on to one or the other for as our favorite bear.
That was going to be my next question. What are their names?
Yeah, one popular one right now is Adak. He's kind of a pansy. He won't defend the food that we feed him. And so even small females will take his food away. He's kind of the ungrizzly grizzly bear. So we kind of cheer for him, and hopefully someday he'll grow up.
He needs to learn how to protect his food, huh?
He does. Yeah, he needs to learn how to be a grizzly bear.
So you made this observation. You went back to Washington State University, and you said you started thinking about experiments that would help you get at this question. And how did that go?
We have some local hatcheries that at the time were getting significant runs back, and so they were willing to provide the salmon. Obviously, I don't have enough students on board to go pick huckleberries in the amount that big grizzly bears or brown bears would want to eat. But we have an apple orchard right next door that is the apples are very, very similar in terms of being a lot of water, high carbohydrate, and not too much else. We started doing studies where we would feed bears, if we're talking about salmon, all the way from just maintaining their weight up to gaining prodigious amounts, and the same on apples. The next thing we did was feed both apples and salmon. In a lot of studies, we let the bears just determine what that mixture would be. And when they mixed them on a daily basis, then they gained more weight per unit of energy intake than either salmon alone or apples alone. And so there was an interaction effect where by consuming both foods, it actually provided a better diet than either food alone.
Interesting. Yeah. So then, how does this research inform us in those ways? I mean, what implications are there kind of going forward here?
Well, the easiest direct relationship is with other Capi bears. And we've gone on to study with USGS colleagues, polar bears, and how they're fed in zoos and what they're eating in the wild. And they're low protein, high fat omnivores. And the directions for taking care of polar bears in zoos has been to use domestic cat nutritional standards. Cats are high protein, low fat. In other words, just the opposite of what a polar bear should be fed. And so polar bears die in zoos about 10 years earlier than they should be dying. And the two most prevalent causes are liver cancer and kidney failure. And so we are certainly promoting that zoos change the ways in which they feed these bears. Brown bears are a little bit more adaptable. They're more capable of handling not the best balanced diets and you know, doing okay. But it's even nice if we can get them to feed them a better one.
That was Charles Robbins, Director of Research at Washington State University's Bear Center. Find more information about the center at bearcenter.wsu.edu and an extended version of this interview at alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Emily Schwing in Bethel, Rachel Cassandra in Petersburg, Kirsten Dobrath in Kodiak, and Riley Board in Kenai. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. If you are experiencing domestic violence or feel unsafe, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is here for you. Call 1-844-762-8483 or visit strongheartshelpline.org. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.